Welcome to the Education Gadfly Show. This is your host, Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation, here with my co-host, the man who puts the cup in the World Cup, Rick Hess.
Hey, how you doing, Mikey?
I'm good. How are you doing today, Rick?
I'm doing well. I'd rather put the cup in the World Cup than the socks in the bow socks. I'll take it.
Well, very good, because you're such an international guy. Does that mean you're a big fan of the beautiful game?
Did not watch the beautiful game. Watch the Heat, man, make that comeback last night. Did you see that?
I did not.
It was a beautiful thing.
I did not, because I'm a cultural snob and I don't watch those kinds of sports.
You and Checker Finn.
That's right, here at the Fordham Foundation. Well, you know, Rick, we received some more fan mail this week, this time from John Schrader, who is a longtime charter school advocate. John lives in Minnesota, and he noticed our Minnesota-heavy emphasis last week, including the crazy right-wing nuts in the land of Lake Wobegon, who think that the International Baccalaureate Program is un-American. You remember that. Not to mention our very weird News of the Weird segment featuring Minnesota's finest, 92-year-old Lucille Kepin, who recently received her GED in prison. Now, his own daughter, Helen, attends an IB school and was actually mentioned in the article that we featured. And she's headed off to Northeastern next year, to major in Latin American studies, clearly motivated by Minnesota's A-rated world history standards. Now, Rick, what do you think? How about a shout-out to the friendly folks of the 10,000 Lakes State?
Definitely. There's a shout-out. But more importantly, I think John deserves props because his daughter is going on to Northeastern rather than on to prison with her, you know, GED, IB kind of cohort there.
Absolutely. And again, it can all be linked back to excellent state standards in world history.
Yeah.
Good. Okay, good, good, good. Well, you know what? We would like to hear from you, too, you loyal Gadfly Show listeners. Shoot us a line at letters@edexcellence.net. All right, well, let's get going, shall we, Rick?
Sure.
All right, we're going to start with a game of Pardon the Gadfly. Then we'll have an interview with Paul Peterson about whether education research is ever going to help us improve our schools.
The Paul Peterson?
The Paul Peterson, famous political scientist.
Oh, different Paul Peterson. I was thinking this kid I knew in fifth grade who used to have a Mondo butterfly collection.
Then no, not the Paul Peterson. You're right. Oh, boy. And then we will have a dose of education news of the weird, as if, Rick, you are not weird enough.
I think I'm touched.
Okay, good. All right, let's play Pardon the Gadfly, where we debate three topics for 90 seconds each. You ready?
Show up.
Topic number one, the recent national science test. You know I can't get enough of it, Rick. An analysis by Education Week shows that the performance of students at the top of the class is flat or declining. Now, Rick, should our education system be paying more attention to high-achieving kids instead of just focusing on the students at the bottom?
Yeah.
Would you like to expound upon that?
I mean, we live in the nation of no child left behind. Let's allow states to set a minimal bar of uncertain province and then count whether or not they can get enough beans over that bar. I mean, what do you think is going to happen? Right now, there's very little push to focus on the kids who are excelling. There's very little focus on excellence, either in the way we talk about No Child Left Behind or the way it's being implemented. You know, none of this should surprise.
You know, what's interesting is that right now there's a real tension in the education policy debate, especially here in Washington. I mean, for probably at least 10 years, the focus has been on closing the achievement gap between low-performing kids, high-performing kids, white kids, black kids. What we haven't focused on very much is whether or not the kids at the top are doing well. And this issue about economic competitiveness with the rest of the world. Well, suddenly, thanks to the world is flat and some other things, this has been a real issue again. And people in Congress and now in the White House are talking about an American competitiveness initiative that is more focused on our, quote, best and brightest. And so this tension between, you know, do you focus on the kids at the top? Do you focus on the kids at the bottom? I want to know, why can't we walk and chew gum at the same time?
You would like to think we could. You know, this also shows just why folks should be careful about making broad claims about this. The Department of Ed put out a couple of those real excited press releases when the science numbers were, you know, moderately good or moderately okay, talking about how exciting the noise was. This shows why you don't get ahead of yourself.
Very nice.
I like the gong. Did we use the gong last week?
I think we use the gong.
I like the gong.
Yeah.
Sarah wielding a vicious gong there, as opposed to Sue wielding the gong. All right.
The gong.
Topic two, Mike. Charter schools in Washington, D.C. seem to be pushing the local teachers union to embrace reform, or so some would have you believe. That this includes experimenting with merit pay in the new contract and waiving some work rules at a limited number of schools. Mike, are we seeing educational nirvana in D.C.?
Rick, I think we might be. I mean, listen to what the union president told the Washington Post.
This isn't the president who's in jail.
That's correct.
Okay.
The president that is in jail is no longer the president. That would
gotcha.
Be the former president of
I'm
the
feeling.
Teachers union.
Okay.
Yes, who did embezzle many, many hundreds of thousands of dollars.
What was her quote? I like to shop?
She likes to shop. She bought a lot of fur coats, if you can believe it. But this president, which does seem to be, you know, a little bit better, or at least not as much of a shopper, told the paper, quote, "The landscape has changed. Our parents are voting with their feet. As kids continue leaving the system, we will lose teachers. Our very survival depends on having kids in D.C. schools, so we'll have teachers to represent." Pretty amazing stuff. Now, you know, D.C.'s lost something like 30% of its students to charter schools. I got to admit, I've been skeptical. I've been on record saying that a lot of these big urban districts were unlikely to ever respond to competition because they're just big behemoths, kind of like how it's hard for GM to respond to competition because of the union contracts and everything else. But maybe I was wrong.
Maybe, or maybe you're just going a little soft in your old age. Look, I mean, you lose a third of your kids 10 years after charters were introduced. They're now allowing tiny little experimentation with merit pay in a half dozen schools, and they're allowing voluntary waivers of work rules in five or six schools. If this is the kind of long-awaited response to losing a third of your kids, at that rate, what, they lose two-thirds of their kids, they'll have merit pay in 10 schools and work rule waivers in 10, and by the time they lose 100% of their kids, we're going to see 18 schools with each. I just don't see it.
Very nice. It's true. I mean, pretty soon these half dozen schools with flexibility are going to be the only schools they run.
That could be.
All right.
I like your point there.
Okay, our final topic. Rick, ready? The GED in Español. Education Week also reported recently that many students are taking the GED in Spanish in order to qualify for jobs or even higher education. Rick, is allowing students to take the GED in Spanish a good idea?
In fact, I hadn't realized this. We also allow kids to take it in French and a couple of other languages. Now, it strikes me that one of the things everybody seems to agree on in the immigration debates is that we need to prepare kids to speak English so that they can be fully participating citizens in the country and that they can work and be productive. Look, if they can add and if they can diagram a sentence, but they can only do it in a language and nobody else speaks, I'm not sure how much good it's doing them or how much good it's doing the rest of us who are paying for the education. So if you're going to give them a GED in Spanish, at least give it a big scarlet S right on the front of that thing. In fact, some states like California apparently don't even demarcate the difference between a Spanish and an English language GED. I don't think that makes a whole lot of sense.
But Rick, isn't the language of love universal? And isn't this just about the love of learning?
It's a beautiful sentiment.
Thank you. All right. Look, I agree. This is pretty ridiculous. I mean, I don't in any way agree with some of the English-only people out there. You know,
nice
who wanna
position the triangulation there, baby.
That's right.
Position
I want to make that clear.
Well.
Okay, but this does seem pretty ridiculous. I mean, if you're going to go on to higher ed or get a job, you know, the GED's never meant much. There's been some attempt to make it more rigorous in the last few years. But now, knowing that it's in other languages, it just seems like it takes the meaning away even more. And you know what? I mean, it was bad enough when I thought that they could take it in Spanish. Now that I know they can take it in French, too, you know? And, I mean, French? Who needs French anymore?
Although we could
that
prop
makes me
up,
even angrier.
We could prop up graduation rates. If we went and airlifted a bunch of GEDs, dropped them, say, in Quebec or Mexico, let the kids fill down in their native tongue, we could have another couple of million graduates a year.
Well, thankfully for us and for our listeners, that is all the time we have for Pardon the Gadfly. Now we turn to our interview this week with the Paul Peterson, from Harvard University, the eminent political scientist.
Oh, that guy.
Thank you, yes. I believe you studied with him when you were at college.
Yes.
Or in graduate school.
Yes.
Good.
Fun to study with.
Oh, boy. All right. Well, let's hear what he has to say about education research and its impact on practice and policy. Paul, welcome to the show.
Thank you for inviting me here, Mike. It's great to be in Washington and see how the government actually works on the ground.
Okay, good. Or doesn't work, as it might be.
That may be the case.
Well, Paul, a few weeks ago, we had a chat here on the show with Jeff Hennig, who is a member of the Charter School Achievement Consensus Panel. this panel issued a report that said that no type of study can completely answer the question of whether students are performing better in charter schools than they would have if they stayed in conventional public schools. The panel argued that even experimental studies, the so-called gold standard, fall short because they tend to be small scale and their results aren't necessarily representative of the larger charter universe. Now, do you share these concerns? And if so, I mean, what's the point of all of this research if it's never going to answer these sorts of policy questions?
Well, the story on charter schools is going to be decided by parents. If they like charter schools, we're going to get more charter schools. Thus far, we have seen a steady growth in the number of charter schools in the United States and the number of students in charter schools. And if that continues, and if you continue to have oversubscribed charter schools, all the studies in the world are not going to make much difference. Where it makes a big difference is in the political debate, because in order to set up new charters, you've got to have permissive legislation. Whether or not a charter school is effective or not is going to depend on the charter school, because the whole point of charter schools is to let them experiment, try a lot of different things, be freed up of the traditional regulations. So to expect any study to be able to tell you completely whether all charter schools are effective is really impossible.
Right. And so you could say the same thing about these voucher studies then. Of course, you're well known for doing some of the best ones that we've got. Is that the same problem that we can't generalize?
Any study that, no matter how well done, is always going to be about the particular group of institutions that it's looking at. Now, if you draw a random sample of institutions nationwide, and if you had a comparison group that was randomly selected nationwide, you would then have the perfect study. So the perfect study is to randomly assign all students in the United States half to charter schools and half to regular schools, or at least a sample of students nationwide and randomly assign them. Then you could start making some generalizations. But it'd have to be a very large study, because you'd have to take into account that maybe charter schools are good for certain kinds of students and not other kinds of students, and charter schools are going to be different from one another. So the most research can ever do is to reduce the range of statements about things out there. And I think that's what research about charter schools has already done. We already know that charter schools seem to be more effective the longer they're in existence. The first year they get started, they don't seem to do as well as after they've been running for 3 or 4 years. Not a great big finding, but, you know, it sort of makes sense. We also know that charter schools seem to be more effective if they're better funded. Once again, not a very big surprise. So we're beginning to learn a little bit about charter schools. Probably the most important thing is charter schools don't cream a lot. Mm-hmm. We don't have a situation where only the best and the brightest in the United States are going to charter schools. If anything, it's the opposite. And that was probably one of the most severe charges against charter schools that we had.
Right. But so in effect, though, much of the research is basically proving common sense right. I mean, we know that if you have strong charter laws, you get more charter schools. And, you know, if you make sure a charter school's open for a long time, that tends to get better with time. And I mean, at the same time, we've got the Bush administration that's really been hyping kind of the gold standard research, random assignment studies. I mean, do you think that's been oversold in terms of how much that's going to add to the public policy discussion?
I think research is moving very fast in the direction of random assignment and experimental design. And that's going to happen regardless of the Bush administration. It's being driven by the academic community norms. And so what's now happening is people are trying to come up with clever substitutes for random assignment, because the traditional random assignment studies, such as I did at the voucher program, are very expensive, very difficult to mount, and you can only do it on a small scale. But there are close approximations to that that are being employed out there. And right now, the review of No Child Left Behind is using an experimental design research. It's going to have some pretty interesting findings that are going to be a lot more believable than the stuff that the government has put out previously. So there's something to be said for this new movement. But it's going to be more complicated than originally thought.
Okay. Well, great. Well, thanks for coming on the show, Paul, and I hope you'll come back.
Thanks for inviting me. It's been great fun. Good to see you, Mike.
Thank you. Okay, Rick, so Paul is one of the best education researchers in the country, but that was not a very strong endorsement for education research.
No, I kind of like that.
I mean, so he's basically saying what? That it's not going to ever have much of an impact on policy debate?
Well, I got to say, I got a whole lot of sympathy for the listeners out there and the parents who say, you know, whatever the coefficient on a, you know, or the point estimate on a student's change in fourth grade math score, that they're going to take other things into account when deciding whether reforms are good or bad. I can live with that.
All right. Well, it's time for everyone's favorite education news of the weird with our special weird correspondent, Liam Julian. Liam, what's that noise I'm hearing?
Or not hearing, Mike. It's actually my new ringtone, Teen Buzz, which I use to receive text messages in the office without you or Checker ever knowing. Why? Because old people can't hear it. The whole thing started across the pond when a Welsh security company created an ultra-high-pitched frequency that only kids can hear. British shopkeepers installed speakers on the front of their stores, pumped out the sound, and dispersed teenage loiterers while allowing adults to buy groceries in peace. But kids are savvy, and students in the US and UK started downloading the frequency in ringtone form, the aforementioned Teen Buzz, and using it to receive text messages in class while their teachers remain none the wiser. Further possibilities for mischief, as far as I can see, are virtually endless, but the real question is, in a flat world that Thomas Friedman has told us will soon be ruled by software nerds from Bangalore, should these enterprising students be punished for texting about their weekend movie plans or whom they spotted at the food court? Should they not be rewarded for their tech know-how? Rick, what do you think?
I guess I got one question here. Maybe you could enlighten me here, Liam. I don't see how this is any different from having the phone set on vibrator or having the thing set on vibrate previously. I mean, what's the big deal?
Rick, the reason you don't know the big deal is because you are one of the old people.
I've always been old people. I get this. But so these kids are now getting alerted that they've got a text message. But what are the teachers doing when the kids pull out the cell phone or what? Well, if the – Liam, well, what the hell are you – are you something?
I'm demonstrating how a text message is sent, how one could send it underneath their desk.
But they could have been alerted that it was coming previously by the fact that it was vibrating in their pocket.
But a vibration makes noise. A vibration is a noise.
A vibration mostly goes against your thigh.
It sounds like a noise.
Hey, as fat as American's thighs are, I don't think the noise is going real far. So I think they were pretty much – okay, second question is, what exactly is your middle name? I've heard rumor that you've got a whack middle name.
My middle name
– it's Welsh related.
Is whack in that it's Irish. And it's,
that's kind of Welsh.
It's Kilkenny, and it's a castle and a city in Ireland. It's an old name. It's an old name.
Now that is weird.
But Kilkenny.
Thankfully,
his name's Kilkenny.
Yes, Rick. His name is Kilkenny. And you know, I appreciate your demonstration of how physics works or sound waves, but our listeners came here to find out about education policy, and unfortunately our time is now over. But maybe next week we can discuss more of these issues.
Kilkenny.
What's your middle name, Rick?
Michael, baby.
Now, that's a nice name.
That's what I'm talking about.
That is a nice name. All right. Well, don't forget to check us out on the web at edexcellence.net for the original Education Gadfly. Till next week.
I'm Rick Hess.
And I'm Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation, signing off.